Damn, that had been fun. The Grizz had lasted a hell of a lot longer than any man or mutie.
How about we don't just scalp the corpses anymore? We could do worse to them first. A lot worse. You know, to help spread the news around faster.
Now you're making sense, bro.
Alan grinned, a knife slipping out of his sleeve and into a waiting hand. He turned the blade in the firelight, inspecting the edge.
The bloodier the tale, the more often it gets told.
Sounds good to me. By the time we're done with him, the Chilling Orion will become a nuking legend that folks will tell for years.
Edward picked up a sizzling tater with his fingers. He ate it slowly, as if the heat meant nothing.
Forever.
Alan's insane eyes twinkled at the unspeakable visions of bloody torture. Raising their tin cups, the Rogan brothers toasted the idea and drank to seal the deal. Then John tossed his empty cup at the girl.
More coffee, bitch. And if you spit in it again, we'll do you like we did the bear.
Going deathly pale, Lily rushed to obey. Grinning at her response, John went back to the meal. He contemplated the idea of a spectacular chilling. Something so horrible that the news would spread across the zone and force Ryan their way. A red night of screaming, worse than getting caught by stickies, and even more terrible than being captured alive by cannies. It was an interesting problem. Could it be done? Then, the answer came to him in a flash. Yes, John Rogan thought, looking skyward at the merciless sun. That would do just fine. The rainstorm had lasted for days and flooded whole sections of the pre-dark Tucson ruins. But eventually the sun came out, and for a week slowly baked the landscape dry with unrelenting heat. Sterling frowned as he adjusted the sling supporting his bandaged arm.
I hate to see you folks go.
Nobody knew what the squat building had been in the pre-dark day, but it was now a horse stable. A row of windows lined the wall, set just below the ceiling. The glass panes had been carefully removed to use in the greenhouses, the openings giving some much-needed ventilation. Adobe brick walls sectioned off the open area into stalls for the horses, and big steel barrels had been cut in two to hold their feed and water. A thick layer of sand covered the floor, and two young boys were sweeping up the manure to be used in the greenhouses. The Baron wasted nothing.
Hate to leave. We have to find out if these rumors are true.
The chestnut stallion was young and strong, its eyes bright with intelligence. These were the best animals the Ville possessed, two of them from the Baron's private stock.
Could be a trap.
If it is, bad news for them.
Jack climbed into the saddle. He had kept the same mare from before, and the animal moved her neck to brush against the hand of her new master.
Especially with these.
JB patted his munitions bag. Most of the pre-dark grins hauled from the redoubt had been used in the fight with the stickies, so the companions had waited until after the rain to retrieve the rest of the supplies stored in the sewer. Unfortunately, the sewer had flooded, and the precious supplies were gone, washed away to someplace downstream. After some heated discussions, the companions came to a decision, one they had never made before in all of their travels. Over the past week, Ryan and JB had shown Baron O'Connor and Sec Chief Sterling the secret of making gun cotton, a simple explosive that was more powerful than C4 Plas. The stuff was utterly useless for blasters, as it was just too strong. It always blew the gun apart, often killing the person pulling the trigger. However, gun cotton was perfect for making pipe bombs. Any further invasions of stickies could easily be handled by simply blowing the infested building into a million pieces with a wooden barrel of the homie Explos. That precious knowledge had bought the companions three magnificent horses, in addition to Mildred's three, and all of the food they could carry, plus a full bag of the new pipe bombs. Formerly a teacher, Doc had been inspired by that event. Since paper was practically unknown, the scholar spent a rainy day sanding a plank smooth and then carving the alphabet into the wood. Surprisingly, the Baron's wife had picked up reading relatively quickly and promised to pass along the knowledge of the marks of sound to every child in the Ville. As the word of these deeds spread, the reputation of the companions grew, and so Christie took this opportunity to instruct the greenhouse farmers about crop rotation and how to get a maximum yield from the greenhouses. The farmers seemed highly doubtful of the idea that less work would deliver more food, but reluctantly agreed to give it a try. These wrists knew old tech that bordered on magic. Old coins, boiled water, and bedsheets had been used to make the stuff called gun cotton. Perhaps rotating crops really would work. Knowing how to make shine from his days on the bayou, Jack had gone with Coldfield to visit the distillation unit for the fuel, but found nothing there that could be improved. That made Coldfield furious, and the man had demanded advice, thinking the youth was holding out on him for some reason. A heated argument followed, and Jack was about to draw down on the fool when the Baron interfered and forced them apart.
Some folks born knowing nothing and get more stoop every year.
While tending the wounded from the ferocious battle, Mildred had shown the midwives and healers everything she could about basic medicine. They had absorbed the information and started setting most of it to rhythm so that knowledge could be easily remembered. Quickly seeing the logic of this in a world where reading and writing were unknown by most folk, Mildred used some radio and television commercials from the 20th century to offer musical suggestions. The catchy jingles were gratefully accepted. But later, the physician had to stop herself from laughing at the sight of the somber healers chanting about basic hygiene, birth control, and battlefield surgery based upon advertising slogans.
Madison Avenue at its best.
How do you double your pleasure, Millie?
I'll show you later.
The physician climbed onto her horse.
Let's get moving, people.
Ryan grabbed the saddle horn and swung a leg over his stallion to settle into the hard leather saddle.
Yeah. Mount up. I want to be far from these ruins when nightfall comes.
And may Gaia guide us along the way.
The day was warm, and Christy had her bearskin coat tied about her waist, the S&W revolver riding high on her gun belt in front, and the MP5 hanging in the middle of her back. The rapid fire held a single full clip of pre-dark brass, and there were no more spares. After that, Christy would be down to the revolver and a few pipe bombs. Privately, she also would have preferred to stay in Tucsonville for another week and teach the locals how to convert black powder into gunpowder. Then JB could have made reloads for the MP5, and they could go north packing heavy iron. But there was no holding back Ryan. The companions all rode with him, or the man would have gone on alone.
Well, if I can't change your mind...
Sterling walked over.
Good luck.
Without hesitation, Ryan reached down, and the two men shook.
You sure you don't want to wait a while longer? What's the damn hurry?
Tugging his gloves on tighter, Ryan really didn't have the words to explain why. It certainly wasn't because of pride or honor. It was something else, something impossible to explain. This was just something he had to do, even if it wasn't a smart move. When a man looked in a mirror, he damn well better liked the fellow staring back. Or else he might as well just eat his blaster. Life was more than a matter of survival at any cost. In reply to the sec chief's question, Ryan shrugged, unable to put the complex emotions into mere words. Frowning, the sec chief sighed in resignation.
Well, at least don't take any chances with those cold hearts. Just ace them on sight. Or better yet, shoot them from behind. Savvy?
I savvy.
Ryan turned his horse toward the open doorway of the corral and kicked it into a trot. The rest of the companions followed. Shaking his head, Sterling closed the swing door to the corral and went to check the other animals. As the companions rode their horses through the ville, the civvies came out to line the street and wave goodbye. A couple of young girls blew kisses at Jack, and several women bowed slightly as Mildred passed.
You know, I can't remember the last time we left a ville and were still friendly with the reigning Baron and his sec force. Heck of a nice change, I must admit.
Well, at least Front Royal in the east and Tucson here in the west. That makes two.
Shit. Two villes out of 100. Not much.
No, indeed, Mr. Lauren. It is not.
Doc squinted at the sec man standing on top of the approaching wall. The armed guards were also smiling and waving.
But then, at least this was a safe haven.
For once, I agree with you.
Mildred rolled her hips in rhythm to the animal between her thighs. Two villes out of 100. Not much at all. The Desertville offered them a vital fallback position, some place to use as a retreat if the hammer fell. Retirement was an unknown word in this dark time, but Mildred had been taught to look ahead, to plan for the future, both good and bad. Deep down in her heart, she had already decided that if something ever happened to the others, This is where she would make her new home. A place to write down her medical knowledge for future generations. A journal of what she had seen and done in her travels with the companions. She jotted down a few ideas already, but there was so much more to record. Plus, there was always the nearby redoubt, Blaster Base 1. Given enough people and supplies, Mildred felt positive it would be possible to dig through the collapsed tunnel and reclaim the redoubt with its cornucopia of weapons, medicine, electricity, and food. With those supplies, Tucson could become the capital of a new America. A land without slaves or warlords.
Millie, are you okay, honey?
Mildred dried the moisture off her cheeks with a sleeve and nodded quickly in reply.
Just some sand in my eyes.
The vision of the future faded away into a dream. But she knew that dreams were important. The wheel was born in a dream. The radio, penicillin, plumbing, the Magna Carta, the Constitution. Even after everything else became cold ashes blowing in the wind, dreams still survived. Approaching the front gate, Ryan could see there were several folks waiting for them near the firing wall. Baron O'Connor was standing with his wife and son, as well as Jan and Simone Sterling, and a scowling Caulfield. Only Catherine was missing.
I see that Stephen couldn't change your mind.
Nope.
Well, can't say that I really blame you. Come back if you can. You'll always be welcome.
Not if I have anything to say about it.
Good luck.
Same to you.
Open the gate!
As the companions rode out of the ville, Ryan tensed as the alarm bell began to ring. He reached for his blaster. Then he eased his stance at the realization that it was just the Baron's way of saying goodbye. That was certainly a first, a royal farewell. Starting across the shatter zone, Doc cast a brief glance backward and saw the huge gate ponderously swing closed. Then a light began to flash from the citadel, and he smiled. Doc didn't know their mirror code, but he understood the message. Good luck, come back alive. Shielding the toy compass with a hand, JB checked the swinging needle and pointed.
North is that way.
Okay, get razor sharp, people. It's a 2-day ride to the Nextville, and the Coldhearts know we're coming. They might attack us from anywhere along the way.
Then why are we heading due north, straight into their arms? Are you planning a suicide charge?
Adjusting his eye patch, Ryan gave a half-smile to Christy as he kicked the rump of the stallion with his boot heels, and the animal responded by breaking into a full gallop. Standing on top of the wall, the segment of the ville watched as the companions moved into the ruins and out of sight. A corporal then faced into the ville and made a chopping motion. Daniel O'Connor dropped back into his chair. He was still very weak.
Are you sure about this, Father? This is not our way.
The folded cloth of the Baron's empty sleeve flapped in the breeze.
There is no other choice.
Suddenly there came the sound of horses, and Daniel turned to see Sec Chief Sterling come riding up with 5 mounted Sec men. All of them were armed with long blasters, crossbows, quivers of arrows, and bags of the new pipe bombs. At a gesture from the Baron, the massive gates rumbled aside once more, and the grim pack of riders galloped out of the ville, heading into the desert on their dark mission. Deathland's Shatter Zone is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, Michael Glenn, Tim Carlin, Christopher Walker, Karen Carbone, David Coyne, James Lewis, Sonny Lasky, Casey Jones, and Ken Jackson. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett.